Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Check Group Chat. We got the whole gang here. You got myself, Connor Reynolds, below. We got JP Fashone to the side. We got Connor Burns. We'll go back in order. JP, how you doing today, sir?
Good. Got a new setup. We got nice camera. We got nice... We got some backlighting going. The year of the professional continues, so I'm feeling good.
Let's go, baby. Let's go. Love to hear it. Mr. Burns, we've missed you, dude. How you been, my guy?
Been doing well. This month, kind of the guys starting to throw again, which I don't necessarily really deal with, but starting to see some pull-downs and whatnot. A lot of guys kind of seeing the weight room and all that kind of actually pay dividends right now, which is sweet. So, life's been good right now.
Let's go, baby. Let's go. Honestly, fellas, it's been a little bit. Honestly, we want to do just a little chit-chat, catch up with the fellas, see how we're all doing, what the facilities look like. I'm assuming we all have all of our college guys are out about back at school, so back to kind of just the got some pro guys lingering over here. We got some mostly just high school, middle school guys. We just got done with a youth team that came in, had a lot of fun with those guys, but what's kind of cooking in your guys' kitchen?
Just much good type of
and we got a pretty hefty gym at this point. And the college guys leave from the back. I got it. Pretty slow, so it's basically high school, all these guys, and professional guys hanging out. But the pro guys are starting to get amped. The spring training's kind of creeping closer, so they're getting excited. We're starting to do a lot more mixed pitch with them in the range for at-bats, things like that. So that's been a lot of fun. And a lot of my time's just been like online training, remote training, talking to dudes, breaking down videos. It's just a different workflow being at your computer all day versus being on the porch in a cage with a guy. But it's still good. It's just different.
Oh, yeah. Burnsy, what you got rolling over there up in the Great White North?
Yeah, so like you kind of was saying, a lot of our guys in from pretty much mid-October till January work throwing. So now they're throwing again. So kind of mixing up schedules. A little bit harder to manage, especially too when we were supposed to be in our new place in January. Open mid-February now, which should be awesome. Actually got the gas permit. So like Taylor met Turf guys today and the cage installation. So that's all going down. They're starting to work on the parking lot and all that. So things are moving quickly now, and hopefully we'll be in there in less than a month, which is great. But for me right now, it's I'm actually kind of doing more recruiting for our next year's squad. A lot of big announcements ahead with kind of from there. And I actually have like two full-time teams, one that's going like year-round, that's kind of replacing the model we already have. So doing a lot of recruiting as well as like actually like recruiting all over Canada. But actually signed a guy today for next year. It was a grade 10 kid, just like freak athlete, lefty, throws cheese, hits some wicked bombs, and like should be the ninth grade, but isn't in the 10th grade for some reason. So like even more impressive. But for me right now, it's a little bit of recruiting, but as well as put together a lot more guys, recruiting teams, and that stuff out. So, it's been fun.
Hell yeah, dude. That's awesome. Great.
That's up here.
Dude, that's awesome. That's awesome. So, like, what does that process look like so you said you got a kid signed and, like, committed. So what does that process look like up in Canada? Like, do you guys have, like, is it still an NLI, National Letter of Intent, for, like, college? Like, do you guys kind of do that as well? Like, how do you guys, like, kind of govern that?
Well, obviously, for guys committing to, like, college in the States, yeah, it's all NLI. But we're getting guys, like, committed to our academy. It's not anything like that. There's nothing necessarily in writing, but it's, like, looks like, hey, you're in, yep, okay, like, X amount of dollar deposit, or it's like, yep, your spot's whole. Like, okay, you're kind of doing this. It's a process of, I think we got a really good cool. Grab younger guys and kind of seeing how they develop and making sure that they're ready. It's like, okay, you've hit, you know, you kind of check these boxes. I think first and foremost, we look for work ethic and character is definitely number one and two to make sure that's all in line. Don't want to deal with any, you know, problem kids or tough family stuff like that, crazy parents, et cetera, right? But, and then also, you know, the talent spectrum as well, you know, are they actually ballers? And kind of as this thing's grown, it's been a lot more of, you know, early on kind of taking kind of what we could get. And now we're getting to the point where it's like, okay, we can start kind of getting the pick of the litter. So it's kind of two things. One, growing our younger guys so that they can kind of get on our top team. And it's like, yep, you are going to have the ability to be a successful college baseball player or more. But as well as being able to, like, you know, look to places like British Columbia, the East Coast, stuff like that. Really utilizing PBR and honestly a lot of social media and stuff. And we've got a lot of people actually starting to reach out, which is sweet. Yeah, no, it's incredible. It's nice, and it's nice too to have that program, the second kind of tier where it's like, hey, you guys are working towards this, like this is what we're looking for. Like, can you kind of get to there? So,
what's kind of that's awesome. Obviously, I think the biggest recruit challenge out of Canada is just like exposure, right?
Yeah. So my job with the hitters right now and trying to get them down to the States is like, for example. Literally like this weekend, it was a Sunday. I was like, I'm going to come in. I got 2-hour slot, set up a junior hack to kind of like bat, like 15 U distance, set up to like 70. And it's like, hey, give me fucking 5 to 10 swings of 95 plus, or you're just yakking it. You look good. And then I put that, splice that together. And then we've kind of all got their infielding, outfielding, catching video that I need from kind of the fall, and then splice that together. And then literally what I do is I go through pretty much every JUCO conference, go on their website, get the coach's email, BC's, you know, if I think the guys maybe got a chance, Division II, Division I, I'll kind of go through the ones I think that would be a fit, and then I can send out like big ass email to like 300 coaches, and he kind of hits me back and then kind of go from there. But yeah, at which that part is actually the worst. It takes so
much. That sounds terrible.
And like we do the Twitter and like the flat ground stuff, but like it's not bad. But I think actually, you know, pulling through and sending the coach, isn't it? It's not funny though. It's the weirdest thing too. It's like the good programs usually reply. It's like the four shit ones don't reply. And it's like, why would I take this guy? Like what? Not even like, hey, looks pretty good. Like nothing. It's like, why won't you hit him back? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I always tell kids, it's like, you just got to send a million emails. And then when they don't respond, just send more emails. Cause like, I've been on the other end of that where you're like, I have 70 new emails this time. And they're all just a bunch of high school kids like trying to help. They're like, I'm going to be honest, I'm not reading every single one, but if the kid's name pops up,
like, oh, for sake. It was about death of.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Not a good thing, even if they lose all the kid and this is
interesting. Well, and I think the biggest thing, too, making sure it's like you got to hook them, right? You can't, like, either on, or just, like, straight to the point. It's like, okay, I pretty much put in, like,
sex and numbers, baby.
Yeah, and then what the guy I'm putting right now, it's like, okay, left-handed hitter, shortstop, 6'1", 185, and it's like max exit velocity off the sheet is where a breath total, like 99.5, bat speed, XG, you know what I mean, like that kind of stuff. Like, don't like bullshit, like, oh, he's a good kid, like, suffering from that. They give a fuck about that after it's like, okay, this kid's a player. Then that's not memorable, but like, they don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah. Who is that? But Bucket Lamar always said, he was like, I
did. We pulled a little bicycle. Let's cut the ground. Let's grab off you.
And then the first thing they say is, this guy's a great kid. It's just a great kid. And I want to tell him, I don't want a great kid. I felt motherfucker. I want somebody I put the box or put on the mount and build that to the other one.
No, exactly, man. Exactly. Well, it's tough too, because like, a lot of guys I have a problem with where it's like, well, I fucking hit X and it, I hit X average, I had this in the season. Like, nobody cares, but what? Canada, yeah, especially Canada, the Summer Bowl, like, nobody cares. They're not looking at that, right? It's like, they're looking at, oh shit, this guy hits the ball hard. Oh shit, this guy looks good. You know what I mean?
Which it's tough. I'll go watch him play, but like, see if I can catch a play live.
And not but judge, like, whether you get to do it.
Exactly. And the biggest thing I tell my guys, too, man, it's like, you gotta get to the point where, like, you're at a point where it's like, oh, shit, like, this is a guy. And until you get there, I'm not sending your video, like, there's no point. You know, if you're roping balls at 90 to 92, sweet, man, that's awesome, but like you got to get 95 plus. Like nobody cares,
yeah, especially about that or something. They're gonna hear about you, some local guy that they know is gonna talk to. They're like, oh yeah, this guy's a ribbon bun.
Yeah, and exactly. It's same thing on the pitching. Like they don't give a fuck if you throw an 80-82 with command, man. Like usually starting show a couple fucking 88 plus, then suddenly it doesn't matter, right? So.
I think you're a band.
That's something back.
Did a lot of that.
Yeah. Exactly. So. And I'm a good example, too. It's like, man, if I was, you know, grade 11, grade 12, when I was getting recruited right now, like, no, I know I have both chances, man. 78 and 81. Like, I was a really good pitcher, and, like, I found a way, and, like, I got lucky, and I went down to Garden, and, like, I shoved, but, like, I threw 76 and 78, and, like, I gave up one run at 786 college team. And they're like, you don't throw hard enough, but we'll give you books. And I was like, done. Deal.
Yep.
So it's just the world we live in now.
Bro, real quick, speaking on flat ground ops, I clearly got a, before we started digesting the
B4S,
bro, like, hold on, let me switch it over. I'll do the quick one now.
Got through the boat with the screen up here right now. Or die 10.
When was that? That was a couple weeks ago, right?
Bro, like, you guys saw that shit?
Yeah. You got like the people know the whole story.
Bro, like, okay, so Flat Ground Ops, for anybody that doesn't know, is an account that is run by Pitching Ninja and then also some other recruiting site. Started as, was it Flat Ground Arms or some shit like that? Like, there's the pitching side, then there's the hitting side, right? So what they'll do is they'll go through and they have a criteria where you post a video, you'll say like your name, contact information, like GP, stuff like that, and then they'll retweet it, right? And so when I have an athlete that goes through, is in a gap year, so has played 2 years of college, did well, posts a video of him hitting like 100 multiple times off the machine with blast motion, hit tracks, the whole fucking thing, and Flat Ground just like doesn't respond. So then like after about an hour or so, I like tweeted at I like went below and tweeted at, and I was like, hey, like, are you guys gonna retweet this? And then they tweeted at me the like criteria of what it takes to get retweeted. I was very confused because it had everything in it. And so then I go to their account and they're reposting just like the most non-informational tweets, just like videos of guys hitting. And like, nothing wrong with that. Like, I think everybody should get a retweet here and there if it's, but like, don't go off and say like, oh, you know, you need to have this, this, and this, and then not like repost when they do that. And so I took a screenshot of one post that they retweeted and a screenshot of my kid that they didn't retweet. And I was just like, hey, like, one of these has all the criteria and you guys did retweet. This other video has none of the criteria and you guys did retweet. Like, what's the difference? What's the holdup? They liked my tweet and then retweeted it. My tweet. And so I was like, you guys have to be trolling now. Like, you have to, like, be trolling. There's no way. And then the next day, I had a kid that just added them. Like, didn't have any of the criteria, anything. Just, like, added Flat Ground at her bats or whatever, and they retweeted that. And I'm like, this kid's already going, like, he already has a school. He's going to Kaiser. They were in the World Series for the NAI last year. Like, this guy doesn't need the retweet. Like, I appreciate you guys retweeting him, but, like, retweet the other guy that actually did all the shit you guys asked him to do. I just don't get it. And I was like, you guys are trolling. Like, you have to know that you're just hardcore trolling right now.
I mean, you know, just Twitter, and you mean Kelsey.
And we'll direct that fighting beef to
somewhat, like, quote-unquote, died a little bit. Trolling, you. And I could stop laughing when I saw that, though. Like, Reynolds is just getting a choice.
Like, why grow?
Bro, I was like, all right, whatever. All right, there's digesting the beef. There's a quick segment. But yeah, dude, I was like, what the fuck? A few others. I just have some questions before we kind of roll into JP's. Somebody tweeted and said, I played Little League. I was never on a number one travel team. I did two showcases in total. I was still offered a scholarship. I got drafted and entered my 19th year in pro ball as a player and coach. Don't buy the marketing lie that you have to do certain things to go pro. I commented and I said, like, not wrong, but don't act like there aren't certain ways that assist more than others. And, like, my thing that I kind of get annoyed by some of the people that have, like, done this before and, you know, aren't, like, currently being recruited and shit, like, yeah, no shit, you didn't go through and, like, you weren't posting videos on Twitter and all these recruiting sites. There wasn't any. Like, 19 years ago, there wasn't any. So, like, for me, I don't really, like, that idea of, like, don't buy into the marketing. Like, yes, like, don't go to every single showcase under the sun. Like, don't go to every single college camp they get invited to. Don't have to play on the top travel team around. But, like, also understand how you're going to get seen in those kind of areas that coaches want to see you in. And understand, like, I remember going through, like, my high school, and we had some older dads that had played pro ball and stuff like that. And they were just big believers in, like, if you're good enough, they'll find you. And, like, yes, but no. Like, I've seen, like, I had a kid that was on my team. He was on my team every year until his junior summer and then senior summer. And the dude was legit, like, was on varsity at a 5A program here in Colorado as a sophomore. Got hurt his junior year and then just completely quit. Because he's like, well, I wasn't getting any, like, talked to. Like, I wasn't having anybody, like, reach out to me, so I just didn't think I was good enough anymore. And it's like, you're good enough, dude. Like, you're good enough to go play, but you have to be seen by the guys that, like, need to see you. So however that comes about, like, you know, I have a buddy that coaches at a D3 JUCO in Chicago. They're 13th in the country, like, preseason ranked 13th. They don't have the budget to be able to go see everybody on them. So I have two players that are playing for them right now. The only reason they're there is because of my connection with their coach, and I was able to set a video and kind of validate it. But, like, for a lot of programs, it's not as easy as, you know, just getting on a flight or getting in a car, driving over to somebody, seeing everybody that's worth a shit, and then going through. Like, there's a lot more to this, and I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Mr. KP, or you will it be?
Yeah, man, it's kind of like me.
Fast being, I mean, you're right. Like, it's definitely be exposure, stuff like that. But I also think, like, high school fans way underestimate how hard it is to apply to high school fans. Just be like, Scott, the Hyatt daddy and Brent should apply in a Colorado game. It doesn't happen. Stats aren't in there. Like, you know, some color stuff put them in there. They're, like, in a super gig in the state run website that, like, it's impossible to find. Like, you just don't know. It's like, for a college coach to find you, like you said, you know, it has to be at first. It has to be, like, by word. Oh. But I kind of think of, like, the whole process, like, but how we play golfer, like arts, like if you have a great hand, probably come no matter how to play, you're probably gonna man it.
I don't.
Like, as long as that kid doesn't just, like, give up, this guy can talk to you. He was good enough, like, so we able. He was funny.
But
if you're maybe not worth the college athletic abilities, like, the three of us, you know, you're not playing with this good of a hand, so you now have to, like, actually play the game with it.
You have to, like, play some poker. Like, kind of the raise or check thing a little bit better than somebody who's just got a great hand. And so that's kind of like, yeah, you kind of got to hit some authority, but you got to send me down.
You got to, like, try and edge your bet a little bit to see if you can actually come away with something. Because, like, for me, like, I didn't tell.
I would sat the bench my senior or on varsity.
It, like, nobody was coming to
as my high school stats type of thing.
So, like, going to showcase and stuff was nice just to, like, shake the coach's knee.
So that way when he, you know, I sent him an email, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not playing it. Like, it's all about that speed type, right? That wasn't like I was blowing him away when they saw me in person, but it's just like hedging your bet. Like, maybe he opens my emails because of that. And that rack.
Yeah, I'm not to say devil's advocate, but I do. I do agree with, one, I'm not a big proponent of the showcases. For sure, especially to just the whole model of, like, man, don't fucking go to showcase in December. Like,
what call?
Especially to that, like, be look, a lot of those D1 showcases, like,
God, how many, you know how many guys take those showcases?
None.
That, those are money grabs.
Those are not worth your time. And I do agree a little bit with the, don't fucking go to showcase. Don't do that shit unless you have something to showcase. Like, if you're a sophomore in high school and you're throwing 76 to 78, like, nah, dude, don't worry about going to, like, 7 showcases from November, December. Maybe take a little bit of time off throwing in the fucking weight room. Start putting on some mass, you know, start gaining some muscle, get with the BLO program, and then come back in February or whenever, rolling 5 miles per hour harder. That's going to do you much better. And then in terms of too, with just like with the marketing, I can see on the side of, you know, like, what was it, the NSCA or NCSAA side, Bob? I think that's bullshit. I think that's a money grab too, man. Like, those guys are trying to just get you to school whichever way they can, and they don't give a fuck what kind of school it is. They don't give a fuck what kind of program it is. They're just trying to get you there. Whereas, you know, my job is to fucking get a guy to a perfect fit where they're going to like it, and it's going to be a good fit for them. Or it's like, hey, it's tougher on you. You're mentally tough to handle it. They've got a good, hitting development. I really like their coach. Like, to talk, you know, stuff like that, right? So I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate. But I do know exactly where.
Have it booked? Keep that kid.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with any of that. And, like, I think the real problem with the tweet first place is people love to do this on Twitter. It is like, well, I know this one guy, and it did it mean, and so it must be true. It's like, what? That's just not science. But it's not how facts are made. And, like, man, it's, you know, but also on the other side, like, all power to you. Keep fucking posting yourself to get it on Twitter. Maybe for one time you have a really good video and somebody sees it. Dude, keep marketing yourself. What do you mean? Like, keep posting that shit. Maybe somebody will see it and they'd be like, oh, man, I really like his arm action a lot. Ooh, his bat path looks pretty good. Maybe there's something there because there, you know, I think there's two types of coaches where it's like they're looking for just a dude who's like, yep, it's an impact guy, and they're just looking to come in and immediately make an impact. Or there are coaches where it's like, I really like that arm action. This guy's 150 pounds. You know, if he comes in my program, we're going to work with him. We'll work with weight gaining, you know, getting him in the gym, and I think I can turn this guy into a guy, right? So there's different types of coaches out there, but, you know, just clicking, it comes down to just like, man, whatever works.
The table was different.
Well, it's like hitting.
Exactly.
Click it.
Nobody cares as long as it works.
That
only doesn't work.
If it does work.
You're pissed, yeah.
But could show up in class at a teacher. Right, I like what JP said, like, I mean, Twitter is just a cesspool. People who have it want big that they have heard of, that they saw. Maybe it's too.
Well, I didn't do any of that stuff, so that obviously means nobody else acts to be the slave leaders.
And Nitz, Shades, Rel, I get sucked. I don't know. For one guy, maybe it works. Like, the showcases, maybe it works for fans and videos, maybe. Like, and to add to your point, Bertie, I know a guy that went to one of Vanderbilt's big ol' showcases. Okay?
There was 400 people.
Yeah.
400. One dude got a scholarship out of it and was my buddy, but like, he was freaking legit. The only reason he went to that showcase is because Vandy had been his dreams. And so what they did is it was like, hey, this is your one showcase. Like, you could pick one showcase to go to a major school and try and, you know, show out. And he picked Vandy and he showed out. Now, Vandy decided to turn around when it came in LI time and cut his scholarship by half what it was supposed to be, so he ended up somewhere else. But it's like, I mean, he ended up getting this push on going. And it is, I don't know, I just don't like when people, like, I mean, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And until it does, keep grinding after it. I don't know, that's kind of my thing. I got a few other tweets here that I kind of want to read to you guys and just kind of get your guys' ideas. Not necessarily like digesting beef, but just kind of like some leaks I saw.
Good.
Another one is girl pull him up. Do you guys see Nick Strong of Twitter? He runs an AIA out of bus. He's kind of jumped on the same tip last year, I would say. He has like 6,000 or 7,000 followers now. But he's like a big advocate for the NAIs. He put out a tweet.
Bryce Colombo.
He put out a tweet that I was like, I don't know, I like a lot that he does because he talks about like make sure that you can look at us like this, right? Stuff like that. And so I really like how he goes about it. Like, put up this means some folks don't understand how that
Moniker,
Moniker,
it's a good word.
Just something simple. Moniker.
Roll. Lock it down. Podcast book. One down. And up.
What does it mean?
The fuck does it
mean? Well, it's a symbol. Like it was bit.
Like it's like the symbol. Kind of like them.
Like a moniker on it.
Would your hand?
Oh, some folks are said how the value of the
Jane moniker is an AMS word.
JV and Varsity is about having two different teams and lots of Varsity guys called Jane Moles.
Who knows?
But you have to find inspiration. And so, I don't know. Like I said, normally I like a lot of this stuff. So I put out a tweet and said, if you're going to be on a JV team in college, just take a gap year. Save your eligibility, save your money, save your time, save your energy, save your work. And so, like, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to be on a JV team out of high school, just like, because it counts as eligibility.
And like, like Reynolds, I was going to actually bring that up. I did not, I thought like when playing on JV means like, oh, as Bretcher. That's crazy.
Now technically you would redshirt by being on a, like you could redshirt and be on the JV team. But it still counts as your redshirt
year.
So like, I don't know, for me it's just like one of those where if you're gonna take a gap, like if you're gonna be on a team and not compete at the highest level for that team, you're not having like strong father, like just take a gap here, like, because if worst comes to worst, you're gonna be on a JV team next year. If you honestly truly were, you're gonna be on the JV team there, or maybe you get better in that year by taking a gap year, then you get put on a varsity team somewhere. So you don't lose eligibility. And you've gotten sicker, you've got better, you got stronger. Now you go, what? I don't know, I kind of want to hear what your guys' thoughts are.
I think I think there are certain instances where that could be good. I definitely think in terms of, you know, I think a lot of the guys who are probably going to be on the JVs are just straight up, like, they're missing the tools, right? I think that's a big thing. So one, it's about being self-aware where it's like, okay, I don't throw hard enough. I'm not physical enough. I need to take a red shirt and just fucking get in the way of it. You know, get on a velo program, whatever it may be, right? But, you know, like, I could see the benefit maybe of, you know, let's say freshman pitcher, good tools, you know, maybe he's at a pretty big time school and, you know, he's only 88, 90. And it's like, hey, man, we're probably only going to have like.
But what big time schools have JV?
For sure. Again, I'm just making up a scenario here. Like, right. Like I don't know enough about it, but like
I've heard of like not good NAIAs having JV. But outside of that, like I've never heard a good NAIA have a JV.
Again,
you know what I'm
like
saying?
I said, I don't fucking know, but I could see the point where it's like, hey man, like you don't know how to fucking pitch to hitters. Like you got tools, but you don't know how you're going to get like 15 innings, may be the number one starter on the JV team, rack up 50 innings here, and like let's learn how to pitch, get you in a summer league, get you those innings, and get you that in-game experience. I could see that, you know. Hey man, like you're gonna get like 20 ABs this year, like, and you're physical, like maybe let's get some JV at bats going where you actually get the sample size. But again, is that better than, you know, taking a red shirt and just straight up player development? Fuck, man, I don't know. It depends on the school. It depends on the school, and I don't know the situation, you know. So maybe that JV staff has a really good coaching staff where they're doing both. I don't fucking know. But again, it comes down to a little bit what's that coaching staff's actual purpose, you know? Is that JV team straight up just a money grab and that kind of thing, or are they actually, you know, working in player development? Probably 99% of it is that, but again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here a little bit.
No, I appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably a little biased because my first paid college coaching job was essentially coaching a JV team at a junior college. So, you know, at Lamar, we ran a redshirt program where dudes would get recruited to like, hey, we want you here, but we want you to be a redshirt your first year in the program. And like the idea behind it was basically we're running a gap year program. It's like we're going to crush the weight room. We're going to crush bat speed. We're going to throw gas. We're going to like build the tools that you don't have to hopefully play on varsity next year. And like the 2 years I was there, we probably had 60, 70% of the guys make the varsity team the second year. And both years I had one of the guys get a scholarship to another junior college or another 4 year out of there. So like I definitely understand, like, most redshirt JV programs, I think, are a school is going to give us more money for the more, like, more baseball players we have because they get tuition money, so they're going to give us a little bit of a cut, which is kind of how it was at Lamar. That's the reason we started it. But like you said, Burns, I think it depends on the coaching staff. You know, our model was like, hey, we don't want you to just be here. Like, we have a dedicated coach who it runs everything we do here. Like, you're going to have practices all the time. This is what the structure is going to be like. This is how we're going to track progress. Like, we're going to do this type of training, type of thing. Or is it just like, yeah, we're going to kind of roll the balls out. You guys can kind of hit the cages, and we play like 12 games this spring against a bunch of junior colleges when the season starts. Like, it's just a very different answer. So I think it depends on like the structure that they have set up. But I also kind of like, if a kid was like, hey, I'm going to go do this JV program, I'd probably tell him like, hey, you should go to like a facility like the ones we're at. But I think the other thing too is like a kid that's like, okay, maybe I should take a gap year. Like a gap year to 90% of athletes is like, I'm going to be in my garage hitting off the tee every day. Like I'm going to get, you know, dad to throw me front toss once a week. And like I'm gonna go hard and run on the treadmill for 7 miles in my 24-hour fitness. Like that's not really what we're talking about. You know what I mean? Like if that's the gap year you're talking about, like go play at some decent JV program. You know, like go get some structure to your training. But if it's like, hey, I'm gonna go to, you know, one of our facilities, then that's, you know, a different option too.
Well, and like with the red shirting thing too, it's like, again, you know, I've been there where the red shirts just kind of,
and my second thought, like, whatever.
Like, it's like, man, like, what are, like, you're registering, like, you're not getting anything, like, they're, you're, like, you're just somebody there, like, you're not getting any fucking help, like, so, well, I think just a lot of college baseball structure fucking sucks, and it's what happens, man, like, how many good coaches are actually out there, right? Like, there's so many programs, like, it's tough to find the place that'll actually, like, do that and give a fuck, and there are some out there, but like I feel like the majority of either situation we're talking about is actually not a good situation at all. Like, I remember we had 10 freshman red shirts at Emporia. Guess how many stayed?
Two.
Burns it.
Yeah, right. And but like in that red shirt, and like in that red shirt year, like they were on their own. Like, right. They were getting lifting program, but, like, I mean, I don't know. They were on their own. Like, I didn't really know what the fuck they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
And again, but it's just so tough, too, because it's like, well, you got fucking 4 assistants, and they're worried about this shit, and, like, the 2 other assistants aren't getting paid anything, and, like, dealing with these 10 fucking red shirts is way more than they need, and they're also not getting paid enough, so it's like, it's just, the whole structure is just, it's fucked in a lot of places, unfortunately.
Not wrong. I've got one more tweet that I put out, and then JP's got a little program, little slideshow to send us through. But I'm sure you guys have seen it too, with high school season starting to get a little closer. I had tweeted, coming in for 2 sessions before your high school tryouts ain't gonna do shit for 90% of you hitters. And, like, I don't know about you guys. I have people buying, like, 2, 3, 4 sessions. They're like, hey, like, just coming in and get a little checkup before practice, before tryouts. It's like, that's not how this works. Like, and my, like, go-to is, if you're trying to go to the beach and you have a beach bod here in a couple months, you're not going to go to the gym once every week, and once you think you get it, like, stop. Like, you may get tone if you kind of had a good base to start from. You might get the beach bod, but you probably were starting really close to the beach bod already. And then you have the others that are not in beach bod form. We're all coming off of holiday meals, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to the gym, you know, once here and there, and I'm gonna have a 6-pack. That's not how this works. So I don't know, are you guys seeing any of that with where you guys are at?
Yeah, I mean, our kind of thing right now, especially now, before, we probably would have taken those type of people because we'll take any business we can get, but we're now at the point where we can just kind of turn people away. But, like, there's so many dads that'll reach out for their 13 or 15-year-olds, like, hey, can we do 1 pitching session a week? And we're like, no, like... No, like we make it where it's like, if you're coming in and you want to do baseball, you got to do at least a lift a week. Like, the mobility and the strength training, like, has to be a part of it. As well too, we tell them, it's like, coming in and throwing once a week, coming in and hitting once a week ain't going to do a lot for you. You know, like it's just not. And, we used to do that, but we just don't do that anymore. Cause like, yeah, it'll give us a little extra change, but it's not actually helping you either. So, like, we do turn a lot of people away that way because it's like, well, what's the point? And then your kid's not better and suddenly it's our fault. And it's like, well, you were coming in once a week. Like, it's just not, you're not getting the bang for your buck at all. Like, it's, you gotta be, you either gotta be all in, you gotta be all out is kind of the thing, right? And, you know, it's different. Like, I deal with, like, right now I've got one of my guys who plays for me in the summer, but he's also a hockey player. He comes in once a week, lifts and hits. That's fine, because he's in hockey season right now, right? Like, you know, we're not going to be lifting 3 times a week. We're not going to be doing a bunch of stuff because you're playing hockey. But, like, with those guys where it's, like, baseball offseason, yeah, I want to come in once a week, it's like, that's not doing anything for you.
And real quick, I'll add on top of your analogy of you got to be all in or all out. what I like to say is imagine like your cliff jumping. If you're going through and you're running, you're like hard, and then the last couple of feet before you get to the edge of the cliff and before you jump, if you try and hold up, you're going to hit every rock, every cliff down. Now, if you just go full speed and jump at the very edge, you're going to have a way better chance. Or if you don't even, you know, jump from the start, you're not getting any boo-boos. But if it's one of those where you're like, yeah, I want to do it. Whoa. And you stop halfway. Hey, that's when shit doesn't go right.
Exactly. Yeah, it reminded me of, I think Chad Longworth tweeted out where it was just like one-on-one private lessons are just like a scam.
And I remember thinking that when I did private one-on-one lessons with kids, like when I was playing, I was just like, you look exactly the same as you did 7 days ago. Like, what have you been doing for the last week? That's right. You've been doing nothing. Like, you haven't done anything. So, like, of course you're not any better. But yeah, it's like, I think when I read that tweet and I started talking to some people in the office about it, and like I said, the transition time for me right now is from like, we go really heavy in gym. Like a lot of dudes are in the building, like you're in the cage a lot, and then they all transition out to school. And so everything transitions online. Right? They all go remote now. And so the training side just changes really drastically. So now it's not like hands-on, like I'm having to work with like, okay, what's your coach talking about? What does practice look like? What's the schedule look like? Do you guys know what you're doing? And I read that tweet and I was like, coaches do the exact same thing. Like coaches do the exact same thing. It's the panic of the spring. It's like, oh shit, we have to compete now. And coaches are like, all right, guys, we're going to do like 40 buckets of ground balls. And we're going to do defense every day. And then we're going to do picks and rundowns. And then we're going to make sure we can catch fly balls. And then we're going to make sure we can hit the cut. And we're going to hit twice. We're going to hit once in the morning, once in the afternoon. We're going to do it all. Like, we're going to do it all the 2 weeks before the season. It's like, it's too late. It's too late. It's like you said, it's like trying to get a beach bod the day before summer. Like, it's just, if you didn't do it in the spring, coach, or in the fall, coach, like, it's not going to get better in the 2 weeks that you have till the season starts.
No. And is where we have a lot of high school coaches in the area that we have some of the really premier high schools that don't do any like winter workouts or preseason workouts or anything like that. Their motto is like, be ready for tryouts. Like, do what you got to do to be ready for tryouts, because we're assuming that you're lifting. We're assuming that you're doing everything that you need to do. Now, if you're not, you ain't got to make the team. And once you make the team, then we're going to start working on, rather than, you know, working on individual hitting, it's going to be a lot more team stuff, this and that. But, like, we got some programs that are doing it from starting in, like, November. And it's like, what are you doing 3 days a week all of the time? Like, you know, I'm glad that you guys are doing something, but, like, is it productive? And then you got the other programs that don't do anything. And then it's an absolute mess. And I feel like if we were able to kind of get a little bit more consistent, like coaches wide of like when to kind of start getting prepared, then that allows the athletes to kind of have a little bit better idea, which then in turns allow a little bit more facilities like ourselves to kind of get an idea and stuff like that. Like right now I've got some kids that aren't in preseason. And I got some guys that are doing 5 days a week with their high schools, and I got some programs that are doing like once a week in the gym, and like it's just so sporadic and different for every different kind of kid, and it's interesting. But JP, you got a little slideshow for us?
Not a slideshow today. We're gonna look at some skellies. We'll get some skellies. More specifically, we're gonna look at the bat that the skeletons are swinging.
Really?
So let me pop that up. Good.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Reynolds, by request, we're going to talk about attack angle and vertical bat angle and the relationship between the two. And I want to start with this video or this visual, because I think the hard part about conceptualizing bat path is that it moves in three dimensions. And most of the metrics we use to talk about bat path are two-dimensional.
attack angle is just working on one plane. It's just vertical movement of the bat. It's not necessarily the horizontal movement of the bat. Same thing with vertical bat angle. It's not in that third plane. It's just looking at those two dimensions. So when we look at kind of the side-by-side or side view on overhead and then the front view, you can get kind of an idea of like how the bat moves through space in all three dimensions. So in the side view, we have attack angle, red obviously being bad, green being good. So that green is like 4 to 16, and then we kind of taper out of there. So you can see like as the athlete starts to swing, his bat's going to come down and then start to flatten out. And then start to work back positive with his attack angle. And if we look at that front view, you can kind of see when that vertical bat angle starts to change. Well, as he starts to come down, his negative, he starts to get a negative attack angle coming into the zone, that bat starts to flatten out, starts to get a little bit more parallel to the ground. And then it's going to start to get more vertical as he heads into kind of that green range of attack angles. And then the overhead view, you can see that horizontal bat angle, right? Really easy to kind of conceptualize that in one dimension, but we start thinking about this, the whole swing arc. As that bat's going to move through space, it's going to move from kind of the barrel pointing in the direction of the opposite batter's box and then kind of work around the body so that horizontal angle of the bat is going to kind of change as the swing goes too. And this is where like going from batted ball to bat path is really valuable to kind of understand this, because if an athlete is top spinning balls to the full side, there's a handful of reasons that could be. Either his attack angle is too high out in front, which, you know, Blast could read that at contact, and it's going to tell you he has a good attack angle when he makes contact a little bit deeper, or his horizontal bat angle could be a little too severe to the pull side, or he could have a little bit not enough vertical bat angle. So he's cutting across the top of the ball a lot. And those are going to be really different fixes for those individual swing flaws. So we're going to pull up two different guys, mocaps here. And they're two guys that I think have pretty distinct bat paths. So this first one, this guy typically will have a flatter bat path. So he's got really low vertical bat angles. And the three graphs I have here is attack angle in the top, horizontal attack angle, which we'll talk about in a second, and then bat angle Y, which is just vertical bat angle, as you would traditionally know it. So horizontal attack angle is our kind of metric to define attack angle, except in the horizontal plane, right? Attack angle traditionally is up and down. Horizontal attack angle is just opposite field to the pull side. So as I kind of scroll through this swing, we're going to take a look from the top down and kind of see how that horizontal attack angle changes throughout the swing. So as he kind of starts to turn the bat behind him, you're going to see that horizontal attack angle start to drop off as the barrel starts to work around his spine. And it's going to get to this point at the bottom here where it's about parallel with the inside part of the plate or parallel with the inside line batter's box. And we kind of term this as like the slot position. And that comes from a couple hitting books in the past, but now as the bat starts to release around the full side, you see that horizontal attack angle start to increase again. So it's a good way to kind of start thinking about it in this plane. But as we start to look at his attack angle now, like we saw in that graph, the bat is going to move in an arc. So as he starts his swing, the attack angle is going to go down as that bat starts to lay back behind him. And then as he gets to kind of the bottom of that arc, the attack angle starts to increase as his point of contact goes further out in front. And as that relates to horizontal bat angle, same thing. Barrow's going to start a little bit more above the knob in his set position. And then as he starts to lay that barrel back, you're going to see that horizontal or that vertical bat angle drop close to parallel with the ground. And then as he gets into contact, it's going to kind of bottom out. And then as he goes into his finish, the horizontal bat angle now increases. Questions? Thoughts?
For me, I would ask, what if I have a kid that is, let's say, getting underneath the ball a lot, popping up, right? But his attack angle isn't, like, crazy, like,
sure,
let's say between like 6 and 12, yet just keeps popping the ball up. Is that then, like, what vertical bat angle am I mean, obviously it's going to change with pitch location, but
yeah,
what adjustment could I possibly look to make with that athlete that will then allow for possibly less of a vertical bat angle, but stay consistent with that attack angle, if that makes any sense?
Definitely. Definitely. So, like, flattening out horizontal or flattening out vertical bat angle, there's a couple different ways I like to kind of think about this. So if you kind of imagine this bat path, and, like, imagine there's a tracer on it, and it's going to kind of show you the swing arc. As this guy moves through the zone, his bat angle, his vertical bat angle is going to drop coming into the zone. So if his vertical bat angle is too high, and that's the reason he's popping it up, which will typically happen, like, pop-ups more opposite field. It's pretty hard to pop the ball up to the pole side with a good attack angle. But as his bat starts to get vertical here, he is either going to, as it continues further out in front, right, his vertical bat angle is going to increase as it continues to go until he hits the bottom of that arc, right? And for a lot of guys that struggle with vertical bat angle issues where it gets too vertical, the bottom of that arc is going to be really far out in front. So it stays vertical the long time. So for a guy like that to try and get his vertical bat angle to change would put him in an environment where a hitter like this is going to do really well. So as this hitter, you can see, gets to the bottom of that arc, kind of right around contact, where you'd want it, kind of middle of the plate, front of the plate. And then you're going to see that bat start flattening out really quickly. His vertical bat angle goes down really quickly. And a lot of that has to do with his, like, wrist pronation, where he starts to kind of turn the barrel over. But the idea is that, like, when he catches balls out in front, his launch angles are super low to the pole side because his vertical bat angle is really flat. So what I would do with guys that, like, tend to pop the ball up or struggle with vertical bat angle issues is get them to hit high pitches with a super far out in front point of contact, trying to get low line drives, because the only way they're going to be able to accomplish that over and over again is if, as their arc or bat arc starts to work out in front of the plate, they have to keep that vertical bat angle a lot flatter. Otherwise, they're going to kind of continue to sweep up and they kind of get a U-shaped bat path. And even if they do square it up, that launch angle is going to be ridiculous because that attack angle is also getting super high, right? So if we switch over to this next guy, whose head is kind of on weird, but you can see the difference in his vertical bat angle as he goes through. You can see, like, immediately that peak is, like, crazy different, like, a lot more severe. So he's going to drop behind, and you can see how quickly that vertical bat angle, like, increases, right? It's very, very vertical. And as he continues out in front, that attack angle goes through the roof because is the plane, essentially, of his bat is now tipped forward. So it's a little bit closer to perpendicular with the ground. And so as it continues to work out front, his attack angle gets really high really quickly as he goes through his finish. So anything that he can catch out in front is either going to be, like, absolutely hammered at, like, a 40-degree launch angle, or he's going to just topspin the hell out of it. That kind of answered the question.
Yeah, that did. That did, sir. So would a possible... How would 45 open and 45 close drills kind of be incorporated into this? Like, is it good for thinking of vertical bat angle? Is it bad for thinking about vertical bat angle? Where do those two drills kind of lay in this discussion?
Yeah, really good. Like, angle toss for guys like this is really good for two reasons. So when we take a guy like this, is like pretty vertical bat angle. If we're going to go offset open or like 45 open or oppo angle toss or whatever, where the pitch is coming into them, or it can even be something as simple as like, okay, we're going to do opposite handed pitcher sliders. So anything working into him like that, his bat now is going to have to match the plane of the pitch a lot longer for him to be successful consistently. So what that's going to do to his bat path now instead of wanting to work almost perpendicular with the ground, because that bat path is not going to match that pitch plane coming into him very long, he's going to end up just slicing a lot of balls foul. So now to fix that bat path, if I wanted his bat now to move to the pole side or opposite field longer, he's going to have to get kind of behind his barrel behind him, and he's going to have to hold that horizontal bat angle a lot flatter, a lot longer. Otherwise, the barrel is going to start releasing to the pole side really quick. And then what ends up happening for a lot of those guys when you start doing too much 45 open, offset open, is they'll start pushing their hands, right? They'll just get really vertical. They'll throw their hands forward to try and match that plane. So then when you start to go close now, same idea. Now they're going to try and go with that same bat path that they've had, really vertical. They're going to catch a lot more stuff out front because it's coming away from them. So they're going to try and match that plane and get the bat around them a lot faster. And so now that attack angle goes through the roof, right? So we have that same issue now where we're essentially moving his point of contact further out front. And if his attack angle is too high and his bat's too vertical, he ends up top spinning a lot of balls to the full side. So that's what I like to do. Like, okay, let's keep it fair or at least hit it to the pole side gap, but like launch angles under 30 degrees, like anything low line drives to really make sure that bat's a lot flatter.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah.
I think the best description or visualization of bat path that I've seen, and I saw this like 4 or 5 years ago, was the, I'm sure you guys have seen it, the like straw with the lid that you'd get from like McDonald's, and the guy drew a little bat on it, and he like twisting the lid so the bat kind of moves in an arc. And that's kind of how I think about like bat plane, is like essentially like a cylinder or like a circle or like an oval. And we're just kind of changing the angle of that bat plane to now cover whatever pitch, or at least maintain some direction through the baseball. Not necessarily by changing the direction the bat's moving, but just by changing the plane that the bat is moving on.
Like an ellipses.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, how much does, like, on top of this, because I know it's all pretty interconnected too, but, like, how much do you look at connection and posture, like, along with this? Like, how much that, like, because I feel like it's, like, BBA, attack angle, posture, connection, like, it's all kind of intertwined and all kind of affects each other's, like an algebra equation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I like to describe the kind of process of going through data of like, okay, we know what the ball does when you hit it, and let's figure out what the bat does that's making the ball do that. And then we can kind of figure out what the body's doing to make your bat do that. So like if you have a guy that's really vertical, right, like a couple of reasons that could be. So like for this kid, pretty easy explanation, like way too much side bend. Like he's just been way too far over, and especially when you watch from the side, like his first move coming into the zone is going to be just to like dump the back shoulder, push everything forward, and so his barrel just kind of like drags behind him, and so his way of getting the barrel out in front of it is just like keep swinging up. But you could also have guys who just like don't rotate their torso enough and just kind of pull their hands down, and now they get super vertical, kind of like the classic like Japanese stereotypical swing. But like you said, like everything's going to be connected to that torso. And I think theoretically, the theoretical ideal, like the, which you hear Blast talk about a lot, is like the connection between the bat and the spine. And like we need the bat to move perpendicular to the spine. While I think that's probably a bit of an exaggeration and maybe more of a theoretical ideal than something we actually see in practice, I think the idea that the bat is going to work perpendicular to the spine for the most part is a pretty good point of reference to start with. So if you have a guy that's like losing posture a bunch and standing up, like his vertical bat angle now is going to come a little bit more parallel to the ground as he stands up. And that's not necessarily going to be like perfect every single time. Like you got to have kids drop their hands or whatever. But for the most part, that's kind of how I at least work backwards from the bat path to the body of just like, if the body moves, then the bat's probably going to change as well. So real quick, one of the things that we've started digging into and kind of is more intriguing of just like you're talking about, like the bat moving, the body is like this bat torso angle. So we're looking at the angle, bat torso angle Y is kind of your typical connection score you'd see on Blast. Bat torso angle X is the kind of horizontal connection. And then bat Z is rotational, which is like, but like axial rotational. So like the bat actually turning, which is interesting for other reasons. But you can kind of see like as the torso starts to rotate here, and then the barrel releases, you can see how drastically that bat torso angle Y changes. And then that bat torso angle X kind of continuously increasing as the bat moves around him. So like you get guys that don't rotate their torso at all, the bat's going to have a really hard time rotating in that horizontal plane. And it's going to end up getting super vertical, because of just the way the torso's, rotating.
Cool.
Man, you're smart.
bat pass kind of the thing. Like, I think the biggest thing for us is like when we're trying to figure out like, okay, let's solve hitting with all this stuff. It's really hard to tell guys how to move, right? Like every guy moves differently. But there's probably not that many ways that the bat moves to be successful. So if we kind of start with what the bat's doing and figure out what the bat needs to do to be successful, then maybe we can start tracing some stuff back to the body.
That's awesome listening to you.
To your bag.
I appreciate you guys listening. That's, you know, my mother doesn't want to hear about this stuff.
Get in your bag, boy. I love it. Burns, you got anything else for the man?
No, that was good.
You answered my question, Valve. That's good.
Wait.
What happened? Honestly, I don't have too much else. Let me see. We got done with our Hit Tracks League, or not got done. We started our first week of our second season of the Hit Tracks League. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. We had a sophomore decide to roll out and hit 100.3. That was interesting.
It just rolled in with, like, I heard you guys are hitting the hit tracks, so I as well just, like, see what I got.
Mind if I hop in? Yeah, so that was weird. Had a couple of my guys I hit with hit some 95-plus nukes, so that was pretty cool to be a part of and stuff like that. So really excited if anybody's at all interested. Sundays, 11 to 4, is live-streamed on a Fast RBI. YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, whatever you want. So come by, check it out. I'm doing a live commentary as well. So I got a mic down there just chit-chatting. Not a hit-chat chit-chat. We're chit-chatting down there. So it's been a lot of fun, man. But outside of that, do you guys have anything crazy going on or that's going to be coming up?
New final plate. God's sake. The new place.
Cool.
I'll be there for an episode. I'll show you guys around. It'll be awesome.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Hell yes. Chill it. Slow time. It's time to blog. It's time to tweet. So, speaking of Twitter and Instagram, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me at jppisone1 on Twitter and jp.pisone on Instagram.
You can follow me at Burns, B-U-R-N-S, AAY on Twitter. I post some hitting stuff on there. And then follow at AHP Hitting on Instagram because my personal account, I don't do anything.
Man, as always, Fast_RBI. If you guys are listening right now on Spotify, if you guys actually go into the Spotify app, there's the video version. All of our handles are on the video. If you're watching on YouTube, same thing. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, fuck you. There's no video for that. So sucks to suck. Go to YouTube or join the cool kids on Spotify. But yeah, So all of our handles and everything like that is on the screen as we speak right now. Yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Next week, I've shared my Google Sheet with the gentleman in this chat. I don't know if you guys have taken too much a gander at it. We have two graduation classes completed for the 2022 year. Still working on three more. For anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, by next podcast, we'll actually do, I'll do a little breakdown of it. And I'll actually kind of try and be smart like JP for one time. And yeah, I'm really excited to be able to share that with you guys. But outside of that, you guys have anything to add?
No. Been a pleasure as always, boys.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this week's Hit Chat group chat. And until next week, sayonara.